Welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is a podcast for male survivors of sexual abuse and assault, whether as a child or as an adult. Know that you are not alone and the abuse was not your fault. My name is Mike Chapman. I'm a certified recovery life coach and also a survivor. Let's find hope and healing together. And welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. I'm Mike Chapman, and we are here again Tuesday night live, where we have live interviews now weekly. We have several people in our audience here. If you would like to join us on future podcasts, all the information is on my website, polarlifeconsulting.com/live. And for all previous episodes that we've already recorded, those are also on the website, polarlifeconsulting.com/podcast. And with me today is AJ Vassar. He is an entrepreneur from the U.S., but currently residing in Colombia, South America. He loves helping people. And again, he's an entrepreneur, and he'll explain more about what he does. And to start off, let's do four questions. Now it's time for four questions, that part of the podcast when we get to know our guest a bit better by asking a few questions. Let's go. And we'll start out. What is your favorite food memory?
My favorite food memory is probably making these tortilla pizzas my mother used to make the family. She allowed us to make them. So she'd buy the cheese, the pepperoni, the tortillas, the sauce, and we would just get to put it and build it as big as we wanted. So that's probably my one, because I was a big kid. So I used to love to be able to make as many as I wanted and put as much cheese and stuff as I wanted.
So use the tortilla as the base. How well did that work? Did they firm up at all, or
they did
work enough?
They firm up a lot. I don't know how she did it, but the cheese melted. It was firm, and it was.
Yeah. I got to remember that. That's one thing we do at Christmas time, because when I'm from the West Coast, my wife's from the East Coast, and we lived on the East Coast. So Christmas Day was all her family. Christmas Eve was everyone's in-laws, but my in-laws were thousands of miles away. So we didn't have anything on Christmas Eve. So that became our tradition, was to do homemade pizza. And then when we had kids, we continued the tradition. And we've gotten super fancy. Back in the day, it was like Chef Boyardee stuff in a can that you'd make. It's nasty, but it's still fun to make. They still sell that too, which is amazing. But we went with Boboli's, or I know our Walmart here at our new town in the refrigerator section, they got refrigerated pizza dough ready to go. So you can just take that and lay it out and all that. So I think we might do that this year. But yeah, the tortillas, especially if there's little kids, that's probably a really good idea. And you can get creative, put whatever toppings you want. Yeah, I love that. I love that. So what is your favorite Christmas or holiday memory?
My favorite holiday memory was actually started off a horrible holiday. It had to be, I was probably 13 years old, 12 or 13. And for some reason that year, we fed the homeless at my aunt's church. And I was upset because like Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday because I could eat.
Right.
And I just felt like my holiday was being taken from me because we had to go feed the homeless and we weren't able to eat because we had to serve. And it turned out to be one of the greatest experiences of my life, to the point to where when I got older, I owned a barbershop and beauty salon, which was 2.5-3 hours from my hometown. But every Thanksgiving, I would open the shop up for half the day and just cut hair for free to or anybody that needed it, just because that made such an impact on me of being able to serve other people. So yeah, that was my best holiday memory.
Wow, and you've kept it up. That's wonderful. But yeah, that giving to others from your talents. There's nothing like that. to be able to bless others. It's, you get so much out of it, probably even more than they do. Yeah. But it's wonderful. That's great. I love that. What is your favorite church memory?
Favorite church memory. So I tell people that I was drugged in church.
Oh.
Yeah. And not with narcotics. Like, my mother drugged me to church like 8 days a week.
Oh. Drugged. Yeah. Yeah. Kicking and screaming.
Oh, my God. Always. And I have so many church memories. Like, most of my childhood was in church. So,
right.
Yeah. I don't, that would be too hard to define, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what was a good memory when you weren't kicking and screaming?
You know what? This is going to sound so cliche, but probably my best memory was, I think I was about 15 years old when my mother let me start go downstairs in the basement and get coffee like the grown-ups.
Ah.
So she let me. Now, and today I don't even drink coffee, but that was good for me. I could go down, I could make me some coffee, and I felt.
And you're
like,
you're in Colombia and you don't drink coffee? You're getting it straight from the source.
I know. Everybody gives me a hard time. Like,
wow.
Are you in Colombia not drink coffee?
Yeah. But when I was in South America, the big thing was the Nescafe Instant. Everyone drank that. And it was like, this is nasty. Everybody,
yeah, I don't understand.
What's the thing? I know. Everyone drinks it.
Yeah, I still don't understand that to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. So, wow. Interesting. But yeah, you got a little independent thing there. Yeah.
Now, I will tell you the funniest church memory.
Okay, I can get a funny church memory. I'd love to hear that.
So my mother is the love of my life right now. My mother was mean when I was growing up.
Well, parents have to be mean sometimes as a parent. Yeah.
So when I was 15, I mean, I was tall. So at 15, I'm probably 5'11".
Wow.
Yeah, 15, I was probably 5'11", 5'10". And if we went to sleep in church, she would make us stand up in the middle of service. So I remember going to sleep one Sunday and she hit me and said, stand up. And when I stood up, the pastor just looked like, are you going to help me preach or something? And I'm sitting there just embarrassed. Like, cause like with the other kids, they could stand up, but they came like barely above the seat. So you could never see them. When I stood up, everybody saw it. And it was, it was embarrassing. Like,
you got a word, brother?
Yeah, right. Exactly. It was like, can I help you? I'm like, nah.
Wow. Yeah. That's funny. I love that. Now, what is your favorite scripture or any inspirational quote that has helped you on your spiritual journey? And what about it speaks to you?
So I'll give you my favorite inspirational quote. And it's not even a quote. It's almost like a poem. But it says, go to the edge, he said. I said I was afraid. Go to the edge, he said. I said, if I go, I'll fall. Go to the edge, he said. He pushed me and I flew. So that's,
wow.
I like that because I feel like that's my life. Like, I'm always challenged to go to the edge. And every time I'm afraid and every time that I feel like I can't do it, and I get into conversations and I'm going back and forth, I'm always reminded that although I am going to be pushed, I'm going to fly.
Yeah. Excellent. And now you flew yourself down to Colombia.
Myself to Colombia. And the crazy thing is, I had never visited Colombia before I moved.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Excellent. So tell me about you and your journey. I know we met. I was a guest on your podcast. You had no idea what I was going to share. And I shared about my own abuse history. And then you shared that you had your own abuse history, not knowing that was even what I was going to talk about. And then we ended up sharing. I think even after the podcast, we talked for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then I invited you here. I'm so glad you were able to be here tonight. So let me know, tell me your story and what brought you to get healing and what brought you to be the successful man that you are.
So I had two instances that, so one, my earliest one that I remember was when I was five, and we were being babysitted by, I can't even say they were babysitting us because they were supposed to be baking cookies with my mother. And so my mother's down there baking cookies and doing whatever, and we're up playing house. And I remember one of the girls taking me into the bathroom and telling me to pull down my pants and telling me to do push-ups on her. I don't know what that is. I'm 5 years old, right? So I'm doing push-ups and she's getting frustrated, and I'm like, I don't know why you're mad. She told me turn over, and then she proceeded to molest me, and I didn't know what was happening. I'm just like, I'm a kid, I'm just like, okay, this tickles, but
How old was she and how old were you?
if I was five, she was probably 17, 18.
Wow, so old teenager, yeah.
Yeah, she was
Wow.
a teenager. I think she was that old. She may have been a little younger. She was developed. I know that. She was developed. And I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that she told me at the end that if I told, I was gonna get a whooping. And I'm like, I'll do anything not to get a whooping. So I just kind of had that as my secret for a long time. So then that so that started affecting other things, because part of me felt it was wrong, but I didn't know if it was wrong. And then I seen older boys liking her, and then I didn't know if that made me cool. So it was just like a whole bunch of stuff that was happening. Mentally. 2 years later, I was in the basement of a member of the churches, and they had a son who was probably 17 or 18, and he just asked me, did I want to play a game? And I'm like, I want to be cool. It's like you hang with the older kids, you're like, yo, yeah, I want to play a game. And
You do whatever to get their acceptance. Yeah, that's
yeah,
very
he's like, oh
normal.
yeah, all of us play this game. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like I'm a big boy, like I could play. And that's when he started basically coercing me to take off my clothes. And when I was like, no, nah, I was like, something I'm saying right. He was like, no, nah, we all, this is the game. And I just remember I remember a struggle. I remember my pants being down, and I remember him pushing my head down. I'm like, yo, what, like, what are we doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to play this game no more. I kind of blacked out, and I just remember yelling and running out the house. And for the longest, I was just like, man, I don't know what happened. And the crazy part was, I immediately went home and told my mother what happened. And the way our church was set up, it's a very small community church where they try to keep everything in house, and they don't believe in getting the law involved, because it's like everybody's family is tied to the church. And
And a lot of churches are actually like that. Even the ones that are affiliated with whatever, they do a lot of stuff in-house. At least they did for a long time. That's starting to change, but yeah, that's not uncommon at all.
So it was like it was in-house. After I told my mother, in my eyes, nothing happened, because like the following, I don't know what day it happened on, but I just know like later that week, I was forced to go to a baseball game with him and his father, and then me and one of the other brothers in the church. And even back then, I was like, this dude just did, trying to do something to me. Why are we going to a baseball game together? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that really affected me and my mother's relationship for a while, because it's like I ran to the person that I thought should protect me. And then it was like, instead of being protected, I got placed back with the individual. And so that yeah, it affected me, man, because I was like, yo, I don't, like, is this how you handle things? You know what I'm saying? It's like, as a kid, you're trying to make sense out of everything. Is this acceptable? Is this how you handle things? Is, and yeah, it didn't sit right with me. So then, that affected my it affected a lot of stuff mentally with me. What's acceptable, what's not acceptable, because it is a small church, you know, word starts getting around what happened. And then, you know, the kids are saying, oh, this person is in your pants. And, you know, I played football and you wear tights and people like, oh, your booty big. And that's why, you know, so it was a lot of stuff, man, that you deal with after stuff like that happens. So, I think initially I didn't heal the right. I was trying to heal, but I think my thing was, well, I'm gonna just get as many girls as I can to prove that I'm not a certain way, because I'm still trying to figure out why would a man even be interested in me.
Right.
You know, so then it's like, does that mean there's something wrong with me?
Right. Yeah. And that's a very common response, that men will either go bed as many women as possible, date as many women as possible to prove their masculinity, or like in my case, asexual, no interest in doing anything physical at all. Even though I had repressed the stuff, but yeah, I wanted nothing to do it. But I've heard other stories, just like you, of guys thinking, okay, they've got to then prove that they're masculine. And right. And so they will get relationship after relationship, girl after girl after girl.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's been it was a lot of that. It was a lot of bravado.
Right.
Playing football, you know, I'm tough. I don't cry. You know, it's just everything to say that basically I'm not homosexual.
Right. Exactly. Right?
And it's just like, yo, this is how I'm proving I'm not, when really it was, I'm trying to figure things out for myself, because I don't understand.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so, you know, that has been a struggle for most of my life, man. I think things started changing. And I think it was 2008. I had a barbershop. After I played football in college, opened up a barbershop, started mentoring kids. And, you know, I grew up in a drug dealer culture.
Oh,
So, you know, most of the guys that we looked up to were drug dealers. They had nice cars, all of that stuff. I was like, I wanted to show the kids, like, oh, you don't have to be a drug dealer to do this. Like, I still like nice cars. So I had a car on 23-inch rims. I had a motorcycle. And the kids that I were mentoring were like, oh man, we wish we were you. And I'm thinking, man, I'm not being honest with these kids about what I've been through. So I was asked to speak at a youth thing that most of the kids went to. And, you know, that was the first time that I ever told my story publicly. And I was just letting them know, like, you know, you never know what someone has been through. And when I was talking, I actually did it kind of cool. I presented my life, and I did it kind of arrogantly because I knew they didn't know. So I was telling them everything I'd achieved. I was homecoming king. I played football. I got a scholarship. I did this. I own this. And I was like, but I have a friend who's a little different. And I told them the story of everything my friend had been through. And I was like, would you like to meet my friend? And of course, everybody's like, hell yeah, who is your friend? Like, and I pointed to the back of the church and everybody looked, but nobody was there. So when they turned back around, I was pointing to myself and I was letting them know I finally am my friend, because for the longest I wasn't.
Right.
I was, of course, after that happened, I was like embarrassed. I'm shell shocked because I had never said it before. I'm wondering what people would think. And there was a young lady in the audience. She was 12 years old. That Tuesday, I got a phone call from the church administrator, and she told me to come to the church. And I went up there, and they told me that the young lady had turned one of our assistant pastors in, who had been molesting her and her sister for the last year.
Wow.
And when they asked her what finally made her say something, she said it was when I told them my story.
Wow.
And that's really what gave me the courage to start talking about it, because the following Sunday when I saw her and she gave me a hug, I can't even explain the feeling that I had knowing that I just helped her out of that situation.
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's so funny. We get inspired to help other people much more so than we would be inspired to help ourselves. Mm-hmm. I know when I was sexually assaulted by a minister in college, I was 20, and it was 2 years before I finally talked about it and pursued justice, but only because I found out he was talking to teenage boys, and you never think there's other victims. You think you're the only victim, and then it's like, oh, he's other victims. And most perpetrators have multiple victims.
Yeah.
You're not, it's not usually rarely one and done. And then I realize, oh, this guy needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
Because he'll hurt other people. Not because he hurt me, but because he will hurt other people. Yeah. And that's when I started pursuing that and getting justice and letting people in power know that this guy was doing bad things. That we're much more likely to tell our story to help others than to help ourselves. But doing so, we help ourselves too.
It's interesting. I think because, you know, when you get to a certain point in life, for me, I'm always intrigued when people are like, I can't believe that happened to you. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I wasn't always 6'3", 250.
Right.
Like I was a kid. Like I like part of me becoming like lifting weights was so it wouldn't happen again. But right. That didn't mean I could stop it then.
Yeah.
Right. I did a video when R. Kelly stuff first started coming out.
Right.
This had to be like 2018. I did a video saying that I am Robert Kelly. And the thing that prompted me to do this video was because everybody was talking about R. Kelly, the monster, but I felt like people forgot about Robert Kelly, the little boy that had been molested.
Right.
And it's not that I was condoning what he was doing, but I was letting them know, like, hurt people hurt people.
Right.
Right. For me, I was very fortunate because I think the thing happened with the lady when I was 5, I've always had an affinity for older women.
Hmm.
Right. So when it happened with the man, it didn't have the same effect because I'd already been programmed to like right. something different. Right? Right. But I'm like, yo, you never know what that's going to trigger in a person. Right. And I remember making that video saying like, I'm Robert Kelly and just letting people know while everybody is getting on him and talking about the monster he is, let's not forget about all the monsters that are in our families, right. that are in our churches, that we give them passes or we keep their secrets safe because we don't want to mess up the foundation of whatever. And man, after I did that, on my timeline, it was all women saying that happened to me, that happened to me, that happened to me.
Right.
My direct messages, it was all men.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, men will tell in private, but they won't talk about it in public.
Yeah, and it was men. You would never, like, man, I'm talking about, I would never. But I guess it's the same way they look at me.
Right.
It's like,
right. Hey,
really? But then, and it just goes to show you, man, you never know. You right. never know. And it's just, I'm glad you're doing this, man, because there's so much, so many men that need to be healed.
Right.
So many
for men sure. And speaking of which, what I know telling your story has helped you. What other things have you done? Have you tried therapy? Have you tried coaching, pastors, whatever? What has helped you most to heal? And what have you tried? And what hasn't worked?
So I started talking to pastors. I started talking to my family. I started, I just started talking about it. Mm-hmm. That helped a lot. Just being brave enough to talk about it.
Right. Exactly.
That helped a lot. What helped me the most was honestly when I called the guy that did it.
Mm.
And because, like I said, we grew up together. Like, it's right. not, a, you know, it wasn't like I was never going to see this dude again. He wasn't a stranger. Like,
right.
every family, they picnic, anything. Like, so right. I remember, I mean, it was just on me deep. Like, yo, you're going to have to call him because it's starting to eat you up.
Right.
So I got his number. I got his number from a relative. I made the call. And when he answered the phone, man, I immediately got angry. I remember saying, like, man, why you do that to me as a kid? And his first response was, I don't know what you're talking about, which then made me more angry. So, and now, like I said, I mean, and he's an average built dude. So he's probably like, you know, 5'8", 5'9", 160 mm-hmm. pounds, right? So I'm a lot bigger than him now.
Right.
So it was one of those things where he was like, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And I had to tell him, like, yo, you have no idea. I've almost killed you twice. Like you have no idea how close you were to death because I was going to kill you. And that's wow. when he broke down. He was like, honestly, I thought you were too young to remember. I didn't. And the conversation went from me being angry to me actually feeling sorry for him because he then told me who did it to him.
Right.
Who's also somebody I'm, right? So it's like, oh, so this is just,
right.
it's passed down, right? Yeah. And I remember telling him, like, man, you need to get help and you need to forgive yourself because where I got healing from talking about it, he was drinking and drugging his away,
right.
his family.
Right.
And I really felt sorry for him. And like I said, it's been the talking about it. It's been talking about it and confronting my, I guess, my demons or whatever we want to call them.
Right.
And I'll be very transparent with the group because several people have asked me, why haven't I confronted the young lady that did it?
Good question. And
the reason is because I think I'm attracted to her.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I'll be transparent. The macho side of me is like, you know, well, if you think I was like that at 5, wait till you get a load of me, right? And it's
right,
like,
right, yeah,
right. So it's like I'm conflict. Like it's I call them human complexities.
Right.
Because on one hand, I'm like, yo, why would you do that to a 5-year-old? On the other hand, I'm like, I'm a grown man now, and it's like, no, I'm not ready right. to have that conversation yet.
Right, and it's common to eroticize and sexualize the abuse.
Yeah.
As well, that's extremely common.
Wow.
And the fact that you're now having adult fantasies of the same gal, very, very common. Yeah. Because our brains, all those wirings, they get intercrossed between adult sexuality and the sexual experiences that were forced upon us.
Yeah.
So that's very common. So has the abuse affected your relationships? It sounds like you had several girls to prove your masculinity. Any long-term relationships? I know you're single now. So do you think the abuse has helped you to not have, or it's caused you to not have successful relationships, or have you even looked at that?
It's actually probably not even the abuse that caused me not to have it. I think it's what happened after the abuse. So when I went to my mother and I felt she didn't do anything,
right,
I stopped trusting women.
Right.
Because if I can't trust the woman that birthed me to be there for me, how can I trust anybody else?
Right. And I think that's betrayal trauma is what they call that. That your mother, you feel very betrayed by that. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
For sure.
And my mother, uh-huh. And my mother, like me and my mother talk about it. Like we've talked through it. I understand why she, I understand her reasoning now, of her trying to help me and her doing her best. And, you know, like my mother's my ace. I bought my mother a car for my 37th birthday. So it's not like me and my mother get along. Like I take care of my mother. That's my favorite woman in the world. But I also tell that that did do something to my trust.
Right. And so you've, so you have generalized that and have a hard time trusting all women, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have that same reaction to men, that even though the abuse was suppressed for the longest time, hard time trusting any male, hard time making friends with the other boys and so forth. I just didn't trust them. There's this constant fear for a good reason. But before we continue, wanted to open up again to the audience members. If you have any questions for AJ, feel free to put them in the Q&A. And a reminder, you can be as anonymous as you wish. Only add what name you want us to read by adding that to your question. And let's see. So what are you doing now? You are now in Colombia, and I know you're an entrepreneur, and you've got a lot of pans in the fire, as they say. So what are you doing these days?
So now I do coaching. I teach people how to build communities and do international retreats or national retreats. I just think international retreats are fun, are more fun, probably because I live internationally.
A little bit.
Yeah, so I do that. I have this thing called Project Know that I'm really excited about.
That's K-N-O-W?
No.
It's Project N-O. Oh, okay. Project N-O.
And it actually, and this is probably, I don't know how this is tied to what I went through, but, you know, for the longest time, I've been afraid of rejection. So what I realized was I started making know the goal instead of yes. So like every week what I do with my clients is we actually have no goals that we have to hit for the week, and if we don't hit them, we actually owe money. So then so we're going after no's, and it makes selling a lot more fun. It makes, no matter what happens in the you know, in the process, a win. And yeah, actually, by doing
it forces you to get out there. And even if you get the rejection of a no, that's still a mark because I made a contact.
Yeah, not only did I make a contact, but that goes against the no's that I need to get so I don't have to owe money.
Right.
Right now, I'm low on my no's. So if any of the guys want to get in contact with me and tell me no, please, by all means, let's do it. Because I literally have to get a certain amount of no's. But what's ironic about it is, and I actually created this back in 2020. It was the first time I ever did a quarter of a million in my business. I did $254,000. But I went back and I got 411 no's.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, okay, cool. So it is just about getting no's. And so it's been a cool process. And I mean, even now, just going through it, it's interesting when I talk to people. I'm like, yo, no, tell me no. It's okay. I want you to say no. I need it. Because if not, I'm going to owe money. And I don't like paying money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting perspective on things. No questions so far. If we wanted to get up with you, what's the best way to reach you? Social medias? Do you have a web page? I know you've got leverageproviders.com, and that's your website as well, correct?
Yeah, I don't ever use my website. I'm a simple dude. Use just all my social medias, AJ Vassar. You just write me at AJ Vassar.
Okay.
Yeah, man. I'm very simple. I'm very easy to get in touch with. I live a vacation lifestyle, so I'm always just trying to, man, be there and help people and show them how to achieve time and location freedom.
That's nice. That's wonderful. And I think that's it. And again, if you want to join us in future sessions, feel free to reach us at polarlifeconsulting.com/live. And thank you so much, AJ, for being here with us. And we'll see you all next week. If you would like to learn more about my coaching with Polar Life Consulting, where I provide one-on-one coaching and group coaching, both with a focus on healing for male survivors, reach out to me at polarlifeconsulting.com. That is polar spelled P-O-L-A-R. I would love to hear from you. I want to hear your story. If you would like your story featured on this podcast, contact me via my website. If you like this podcast, please rate and review, because that's how other people can find me, and I really want to spread this message of healing and hope to others. And remember, you are not alone. Healing is possible, and the abuse was not your fault. Let me repeat that. The abuse was not your fault. See you next time on the Healing for Male Survivors podcast.